Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the incredibly corrupt, and yet it's somehow known as Transparency International's least corrupt country in the world. You know why that is, ladies and gentlemen? It's because Transparency International allow countries to voluntarily fill in the form. So they send it to New Zealand, and they say, hey bro, have you got any corruption going on over there? And New Zealand goes, nah, we don't. And they send it back blank, and then we become back number one. I'm not making it up. That's actually how it works. You can't make it up, bro. You cannot make this stuff up. Okay, anyway. I have to control myself sometimes when I just think about just how freaking corrupt my country is. Oh my God, it's descending into darkness and madness. Anyway. Somebody from a country that's far more corrupt and far darker, America, Mr. John Carman, formerly of the Secret Service. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, it's good to be back.
It's been a long, long time, has it not?
Well, that's a long plane flight, you know.
Yeah. Tell me what's been transpiring for you.
Oh, goodness. Since the last time we talked.
Well, either that or whatever's on your mind now.
Oh, I've got all kinds of things on my mind. I mean, you were just talking about how corrupt some of these countries are. I remember an author, he was either out of Australia or New Zealand, and I was in a book called Drug Wars, I believe. But it had sort of a slant on all the smuggling that goes on because people like to bring in wild animals, and that's a violation of the fish and wildlife stuff. But Flight 370 still hasn't appeared yet. It's still out there somewhere. Do you remember that one?
A lot of confusion about that case as well. Nobody seems to have any clue what the heck's going on. And I've had all these kind of people throwing theories at me. And I was just like, look, bro, in the lack of all available evidence, let's just assume it's aliens, okay? Okay? You know?
I could do that. I mean, we could talk about that stuff too, because with my background in the Secret Service alone, we actually have a record of a manifest sheet. You know what that is, right?
A sheet that makes things come into the material world through
no.
The materium? No? That's not manifestation?
No, but that was a damn good second first guess, because some people probably would have gone that direction. But no, it's just an ordinary list of people on a plane flight that normally they just have to list. So they call it a manifest. And it lists the people that were on a special trip by Eisenhower over to a special Air Force base. They say it was Holloman Air Force Base, when I believe, in fact, it was probably Edwards Air Force Base here in California. And he brought along a friend of his who was a former movie star, Jackie Gleason. So we're talking before your time frame. back in the early mid-50s before Kennedy was president. And they had a list of these agents who were present at this meeting where they met a flying discs that hovered above the ground by so many feet, and they had a special meeting for 6 to 8 hours. They shut the whole base down, the whole nine yards. But it was just kind of funny. It just kind of sparked a slight memory on that stuff, because I've done research on even that stuff too.
Well, I think that when it comes down to aliens or unexplained things or whatever, you know what's really, really bad and really generates a hell of a lot of rumors that aren't based on fact? Secrecy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, like I was going to say earlier, the stuff with the Flight 370, I'm not a total, FAA type of an expert, but I did exercise enforcement in U.S. Customs on aircraft coming into the United States and sometimes leaving the United States for foreign countries. So that means I had to be familiar with private aircraft, commercial aircraft, how to search it, what to look for, the licenses that they require, the paperwork that the pilots have to have, and all kinds of places to smuggle. And I found contraband on commercial flights as well as, over $20,000 cash one day, just to give you an idea. But every time I hear about one of these little incidents where they're missing a plane, that's a flag right there. Two military aircraft that came into the United States were supposed to land in San Diego, one at North Island and one at Miramar, which is now MCAS, Marine Air Station. Used to belong to the Navy in a different way. And when planes are supposed to show up, you have to have like at least an hour's notice so you can get your car, get the paperwork, drive out to the location, be there, at least 30 minutes, no longer than 20 minutes before the guys get there. When they don't arrive, that raises more flags, and that's a serious thing. It's not just an offense, it's a national security issue, because why would the U.S. military lose any of their jets? And what's important about the jet? And do they just write it off like, it's no big deal? No, it is a big deal, because that means they're doing the same thing that you just said earlier. They're lying about it. See, they're covering up. So,
but why? There's always a reason to cover things up. Either A1, the public would just be too afraid. B2, we're corrupt and we might get implicated in some kind of crime. And
yes.
And C3, I just don't know how to explain this to people without them going nuts.
No,
so we're just going to keep it under wraps.
It's common sense. It's exactly what you think. It's number two. The best answer on your school test was always, a good answer would be, a good guess would be B. So I think B fits this one perfectly, because there was a military Marine Corps colonel by the name of James Sabo up in El Toro who was killed because he was getting ready to release information about smuggling of narcotics into the United States using military aircraft. And as a customs officer, I had the ultimate jurisdiction over anybody that arrived into the United States, even if it was from outside the world. Now, I don't want to quote moon rocks, but there's a perfect example. When the moon rocks came in from the moon, guess who had to verify, check it, and see the paperwork, and it had to be listed on, guess what? A manifest. Moon rocks. So back in 1969... I'm not sure what you were doing. What were you doing in 1969? Were you around?
I wasn't even swimming around in my father's left testicle.
My goodness!
I was born in the year of Orwell's 1984.
Oh wow, that's special. So
I thought it was kind of prophetic.
Yeah, it is. So to give you an example, that's something that they had to declare. But unfortunately, there's so much covering up of what's going on. The public has a need to know, but the majority of them who are dumbed down, they don't care about it, so they're part of the problem.
Have you noticed that one of the principal effects of dumbing down is to curb curiosity?
Yeah, that's... I try not to be political about this, because when I was in law enforcement, I thought, hey, there's a black and white job. It's either left or right. Right or wrong, it's pretty much clear about what your job is, what you need to do. And when you arrest somebody, you have evidence, and you put them in prison for a crime or whatever. you put them through the justice system. But in these days, you're not sure what's going on because it's in the gray a lot. And it's Democrats, left-wing Democrats versus right-wing conservative Republicans, or vice versa. And I'll even get into conversations or, I don't want to call it an argument, a challenging conversation over certain terms. And some of these people, you can't even talk to them. It'd be like this friend of mine who's a Jewish rabbi. He was trying to talk sense into some Palestinian Muslim in Israel or something. They don't mingle. It's like oil and water. You know, you can't blend the two. And no matter what you do and try to talk reason, it doesn't work. So the government has a lot of that going on, where they're doing a lot of covering up, because if you found out what was really going on, you'd be scared to death because of all the stuff that they're doing with control and the people with the money. You know, I keep hearing this guy Soros. You know who Soros is?
Oh, George Soros, the big climate change Agenda 21 Codex Alimentarius Mafia Foreign Trading Enron scumsucker.
Perfect, perfect. I'm glad you know.
I was like, boom, boom. I think I nailed him in one.
Yeah, you did. You nailed him, because when you look at people like that and the people, the elite, and when I was in the Secret Service, I protected people like Zbigniew Brzezinski. And, oh, of course, there was Henry Kissinger and the President, Carter, Ford, and all these other people and their families and stuff. But some of these people squeaked in, and you got to wonder, oh, like Nelson Rockefeller, for instance. He's still semi-connected, or was connected to some of those rich elites. And when those people get together, while they're handling all the money, that other guy in the Oval Office is being kept busy with other things, and they're doing all kinds of stuff with decisions that affect the whole world. You know, I mean, to this day, we still have people that are hungry, starving, no water, no food, no shelter, whatever. And we could easily give people stuff to plant food and have water and shelter and trees that produce fruit and all kinds of things. But they're not doing that. And in fact, they're going the opposite direction, where it looks like they want to get rid of half the population of the planet. You know, whatever it is this week, I forget.
At least. And the rate of death in America just caused by the medical system alone, I have no doubt that they're going to achieve their goals fairly soon. And this comes down to the mentality. Now, John, were you born into an incredibly wealthy family, silver spoon in hand, never have to work a frickin' day in your life in order to become real successful and known by everybody? No? Me neither. All right? So we've actually had to earn our way. And in so doing, we need to have respect for other people, respect for people's work, jobs, ethics, their levels of intelligence and things of that nature. However, if we never had to earn any of that knowledge for ourselves, whether by experience, hardship, trauma, etc., we wouldn't have such profound respect for the lives of others, because we've never actually had to go through such struggles. And I think this is kind of the reason why the so-called elite are at such a disconnect with the general public, is because they've never actually had to live like one of us. Sort of like, I don't know, do you know what it's like to be a prairie dog? No, of course you don't, because you're a human. You're not a prairie dog, you know. You don't give a frack. Well, you don't go burrowing down there, do you?
Well, I've lived in the desert. I know what desert survival's like. So I relate to the animal world in a different way. So I appreciate the animal world and understand, you know, like PETA and, you know, all these other groups that they try to support animals. Like here in San Diego, they're trying to support a thing about the whales that are in captivity and something that's probably no bigger than your jacuzzi, you know?
Yeah, and I was just thinking to myself, like, all these organizations, all these bleeding hearts go, oh, save the animals, save the whales, save the snails, you know? It's kind of like, well, are you by chance just sitting there, just like a Christian Children's Fund organization, saying to everybody, we've got this really great cause, etc., give us X amount of money, and we'll send so much of that money to save the whales or save the snails, etc.? But the reality is, in order to advertise to everybody and tell them, hey, you need to give us money so we can save the whales and whatnot, they actually wind up having to spend most of that money on advertising and management and very little of the actual, you know, rich nuggety goodness of people's charity goes through to them. And this is kind of how I think the world really works nowadays, is the vast majority of the things that tell you that they're for a good cause only have a front as a good cause, and whatever they're doing, it ain't good.
Yeah, I mean, over here in California, we get a lot of these groups that will come up to you in a shopping mall, you know, and I'll go walking around. I'll run into a group of people that have Greenpeace shirts all over them, and they want to talk about Greenpeace. They say, hey, you know, I'd rather get a job with Greenpeace because I'm not rich. Maybe I could get a job because I've got such a technical background and I know a lot of stuff. And it never happens, because it's exactly what you just said. They're using that as a front to collect money for other purposes. And the same thing with a lot of these other organizations. And what they do is they go after the unintelligent people who are probably God-fearing people, and there's nothing wrong with that. They go to church every week, that sort of thing. If you're looking at the classic Judeo-Christian type of person, unless they're into Zen Buddhism or some other religion, then it's a little bit different. But they still have the basic same thing. You donate to the poverty people, and hopefully that money gets to the right people that they can feed themselves. But still, to this day, there are people starving right now. And I'm thinking, my God, that is so inhuman to just let that go. You know, if these people have money.
Not entirely dissimilar from the way political parties manipulate people. Just vote for us and we'll solve all your problems. Well, hold on a second, bro. I voted for that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy, all the way back through the frickin' Nixon administration, and you guys haven't improved jack ever.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of stuff, but, you know, I think it goes back before when Kennedy was killed. If you look at the actual people in charge, but the problem is it's hard to pinpoint who did what to who, because there was more of a mafia, there were outside influences, you had people involved in the Bay of Pigs, they had a revenge factor going on. And now, just recently in the last couple of years, I've learned that more and more attention's focused on LBJ, who was the vice president at the time, and that guy right there would kill his grandmother if he could get president, you know, so it didn't matter. And a lot of evidence is turning up later about that. But there's still people tied up today that are still alive, like George Herbert Walker Bush Sr., who's been CIA. And to this date, he can't remember where he was on November 22nd, 1963.
Oh, right, right. Like everybody can't remember where they were on 9/11. You know, it's a similar thing.
Exactly.
And in fact, do you reckon that the 9/11 case and JFK are so similar in the point that it's a false flag attack or something of that nature, very much covered up by the government. And as time progresses, on and on and on, because it's not here now, people lose interest. And eventually, even if they declassify it, it'll be 50 years too freaking late.
It's a decoy. Don't worry about it. It's a decoy. And I'll tell you why. I mean, it's hard for me to relay this information, but if you look at my website, customscorruption.com, what's left of it now, there's an article near the top where I compared Hitler's Enabling Act to the Patriot Act, which is something Bush got involved in. And if you look in history, you go, well, wait a minute, didn't they have a Reichstag fire or something, and Hitler's guys did that because they wanted to blame it on the Jews? Well, we had the Marat building exploded with the Timothy McVeigh and some other unknown militia types that were retaliating, and that was in 95. That was right around the time Clinton was president and Janet Reno was attorney general and stuff, and then it switched over to George Bush, or I missed my dates there. Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, that sort of thing. Okay. But point was, that was another flag. Those things didn't happen on their own, and the building didn't fall down, just like 9/11. The buildings didn't fall down because of two aircraft that hit it.
Three buildings didn't fall down because two aircraft hit them?
Well, yeah, exactly. Let's talk about that, too. How come you got the 9/11 buildings, the Twin Towers, and they're talking about building number 4, building number 5, building number 7? Oh, what was it? They decided to implode some buildings that day, the same time they were flying aircraft into the buildings?
At the same time they were running drills about flying aircraft in the buildings?
Well, plus I've got an EOD background. That's explosive ordnance background. And we had to know that stuff to anticipate what people would do for counter-terrorist type activity, or terrorist activity, rather, like Carlos the Jackal back in the 70s, right after Munich in 72. And they would do it exactly that. They would take ammonium nitrate, which is your big bags of fertilizer, stick it in the trunk of a car with as many bags, hundreds of pounds, 500-600 pounds, and then do an igniter. I won't explain how. And they would throw an igniter of some sort, walk away, and a lot of times they would mix it with gasoline, and that would help the other part of the chemicals to mix and cause the explosion. We've known stuff like that since I was taught in the government, Secret Service, CIA, DEA, everybody else in 1974. But we were looking for the same terrorists doing the same things. But when the implosions occur, you've probably seen them. You've seen where they got an old building, they tear apart what they're going to take, and then the rest they're just going to saturate with certain charges around the structure on the interior skeleton of the building. And then they just sit back and implode it, and it all falls into one spot. Real nice and neat. All they have to do is scrape it up and then take all the trash away.
Yeah, perfect sequencing, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And that's exactly what we saw. Not just me, but other EOD-trained people in San Diego, Metro Arson Strike Team, they saw the same stuff at the Morale building. It was a planned detonation. It wasn't something that they just pulled up a truck and ran away and it blew up.
I heard a theory that the plan was actually to fully demolish that entire building, but the certain charges that and other bombs that were planted in the building didn't go off, so it only took out the front half of the building, but they were supposed to take out the whole thing.
Right. I've heard something like that too. They've also found body parts that didn't belong to certain people. One of them was to an Arabic connection, but some of that stuff's speculation, because I've even heard speculation that it's always the Mossad. You know, oh, that's the Mossad, they're doing that. Well, why would Israel cause a problem, and why would they allow Muslims to want to put a temple or a mosque on that sacred site? That doesn't make sense. So, obviously, they're just full of rhetoric, lies, and BS. You know, that's not how the Mossad is. And I know a few people in Israel. They're our allies. So if something happens, they're going to go to war and do what they have to do no matter what. But they're just being nice about it. That's all. They're being very, very nice.
Well, Mossad warned the U.S. government and a number of people leading up to 9/11 that there was something going on. But of course, they were ignored.
What I was going to do, I have to interject real quick. The reason I brought them up in the first place was because a lot of the people that were in the Munich 1972 killings at the Olympics, the Mossad became active, very active right after that through Golda Meir and all those other high-ranking guys like Moshe Dayan and things like that, so that they could go ahead and go after these terrorists. And that was like the focal point or the beginning of their true nature or their true mission, was to go after these people worldwide. Those people were also connected to Nazis back in World War II. Same difference. The Muslims today, the terrorists, connected to the Nazis, same mission, same stuff. Just a different name.
Well, what was it? Mark Twain, who says, history doesn't repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme.
Oh, yeah.
I was also wondering about this, you know. I love the ironic, the funny names of things. Like, for example, is the reason why they call them Mossad is because they're not there to make you more happy.
Yeah, that's an interesting history. I mean, I'm not Jewish, and I'm not Israeli or nothing like that. But you'd have to look at the history. Like the Masada was a tall mountain that they had back when the Romans were around. And there was a lot of Israelis or Jews there at the top, and they were holding them off for like months and months and months. And they even had their own water supply, but eventually they were going to get killed. So they did a mass suicide just to keep from being killed by the Romans. You know, it's kind of a history thing. And it's supposed to be one of those things that they said it would never happen again.
I don't... The subject of Israel, Gaza, etc., makes me inherently uncomfortable as a radio show host. The same reason. Similarly, with let's say, for example, the topic of racism or pedophilia or things like that. Not because I don't know what these are really about and I'm struggling to understand. You know, I know the history and a lot of the facts behind these elements. What is problematic about it is that whenever you mention anything in any way about either of these three topics, you have three sections of reaction. There's the people who are reasonable, who are willing to make a judgment with their mind, and there are those who are unreasonable, who are not willing to make a judgment with their mind, and those are split into two factions of either anti what you say or pro what you say and anti anything anyone else says. You know what I'm saying? There's no balance there. And that's why these topics are often so controversial. Unfortunately, we have just run out of time for this segment here, John. Thank you very much for your contribution. Your website there, I'll make sure to give that out for people, is customscorruption.com. That's customscorruption.com. John, thank you very much for your time today, sir.
Sure, anytime.
All right, we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted, a fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president it seemed. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go, in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests still here with me is John Carman, and also we have now joining us from freedomslips.com, Mike Harris. Mike, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, Vinnie. It's glad to be back on your show again. It's been a while.
It's been a while, too, and it's also been a while since I've talked to John, and I kind of just, you know, was talking to you both at the same time and talking to the producer at Revolution Radio, and I thought, you know what, bugger it. I'm not really doing anything today. I'll interview you and get you both together and see what the hell comes of it, you know? I like to just throw things together and see what happens. My wife doesn't like it when I'm in the kitchen, but, you know, if you want to make an omelette, you've got to break some eggs and leave some shell in there too. Anyway, Mike, can you tell us a little bit about what's been on your mind just of recent late, and we'll see if we can turn a conversation out of it.
Well, what's been on my mind is I look at how thorough and systematic the infiltration of the U.S. government has been by Israeli sympathizers. And it's to the point where I don't think that we have really a Republican form of government in the USA anymore. I think really we're something else now. We're somewhere in that dictatorship range. And I go back to whenever Bush was handed the presidency, December 12th of the year 2000, when the Supreme Court intervened. I look at the trail of tears that's happened since then. I look back to really the linchpin of this started when they murdered JFK. And I look at the one failed policy after the next failed policy after the next failed policy. You know, I mean, the war on poverty didn't work. The war on drugs didn't work. The free trade agreements didn't work. All things are unmitigated disasters. We have a virtual open border in the U.S. now. We've got 55 million illegal aliens living in the country. And I just shake my head and I say, what the heck has happened to my country? What's going on here? And it just it makes me distraught.
Well, I think John's had quite a lot of experience in working for the U.S. government himself, and I think nowadays it's no longer confined to the U.S. as a phenomenon of the government being controlled by overseas foreign interests or something of that nature. I mean, for instance, New Zealand's Prime Minister, who's running for a third election term now, and by all accounts he's probably going to win, despite the fact that every single day it gets revealed a new thing about how he's corrupt, or a new thing about how he's indebted the country, or a new thing about how he's restricted civil liberties. And who was his former employer before he became the Prime Minister of New Zealand? You guessed it, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York on the Foreign Exchange Commission for Derivative Trading, which is something you have to be appointed to. And who was his mentor? Why, it's actually the man who's number one on the list, known as Wall Street's most corrupt person, right? He rubs shoulders with Timmy Geithner. And as far as I'm concerned, guys, there's something rotten inside America, but I don't think it actually originated there. I think Operation Paperclip is in full swing, right? It's like, let's import this big nasty Nazi virus and then let's just inject it into our country. Let's put him in NASA. Let's put him in CIA. Let's put him in this, that, and the other. And all of these Nazis were like, hey, these people are stupid enough to trust us. Maybe we can take over the country from the inside. And then by the time they even realize it, there'll be the new Fourth Reich.
Well, you know, you've got a point. I've had Michael Shrimpton on recently, and he's big on the Nazi involvement, the what he calls the DVD. And, you know, I'd never heard of the DVD before, but if you look at what the DVD is, what they do, if you ever watch the villains in the James Bond movies, that's DVD. These are the guys who are out there doing this stuff. And, you know, I'm of mixed mind here. I see what Israel does, and I see the grief that they've brought to the Middle East and the whole world. And then I wonder about Operation Paperclip. You know, they did bring the whole Galen organization into the CIA. They did put, what's his name? What's that guy's
Werner
name?
Werner von Braun hit a NASA.
Werner von Braun into NASA and put him in charge. And so, yeah, these were committed Nazi SS guys. And so I'm really confused as to who are the real bad guys. I know we got them. We're up to our eyeballs. I look at George H.W. Bush. Now, that's a Nazi. George W. Bush, another Nazi. These guys have done nothing good for this country at all.
And that goes all the way back to Prescott Bush, George H.W. Bush's father, who was charged under the Trading with the Enemy Act for supplying and laundering money for Nazi Germany during the war.
Well, And part of Prescott Bush's plea deal that got him not doing prison time was that he or no member of his family would ever hold public office. And do you remember that White House scandal where they had one of the staff members of the White House was caught with documents that he slipped down his pants out of the Congressional Library of Congress? Sandy Berger was the guy. That was Prescott Bush's original plea deal, and it disappeared.
Unbelievable. So, see, everybody just thought Sandy Berger was what happens when you take some McDonald's to Venice Beach.
Yep, I understand. A Sandy Berger, just don't drop it.
Yeah, it's a bit cheesy, isn't it? So, sorry, John, you were saying something about this, weren't you? Because I'm thinking, like, infiltration, right? This is something in those... in those Dan Brown novels that they talk about, the Illuminati are really, really good at, regardless of whether or not you believe there's actually an official organization for the Illuminati. In my opinion, it's actually kind of more of a mentality or a way of doing things, a culture, rather than an actual physical organization that has like a head office and whatnot. What do you think about that, John?
Well, I'm not a total expert, and I understand what you guys are saying, but it's kind of like when I was at the White House and I'm protecting people like Henry Kissinger, and people point him out as being one of these Illuminati types. So then I go, okay, that's interesting. But we didn't talk about it back then as we know the information today. In other words, it was kind of around us, but I didn't see it. It wasn't obvious, in other words. And then we got Zbigniew Brzezinski, and what's he doing? You know, and a lot of these people influence the person that they have in the Oval Office And a lot of people assume that that man in the Oval Office, no matter who it is this week, knows everything, and they don't. I think that Jimmy Carter, in defense of him at some point in time, was being misinformed. He was being manipulated by information he was not getting properly. And at one point, he even asked George Herbert Walker Sr. for help on something, and Bush blew him off, saying, well, you've got access to the Library of Congress. Go do your own research.
Go look it up.
And that man was in the CIA for like forever, and probably in Dallas that day in 1963. And this man, who's the president of the United States, most powerful position in the world, probably. I tell you what, if it was me and that guy didn't cooperate, I'd have him down on his knees in the next 24 hours, pretending to say what he knew. You know,
I'd have him locked out of his office if he was still at the CIA
or but something.
You brought up a good point there, John. And the point is that, you know, yes, Dr. Jim Fetzer has got photographs that show George H.W. Bush was at Daley Plaza the day that JFK was killed.
Right.
And you look at this guy. He was director of the CIA. He was the DCI, Director of Central Intelligence. He was 8 years as Reagan's vice president. He had his own presidency for 4 years. He was very close to the Clinton administration during their reign. And then he had his own son in there for 8 years. This guy's got 50 years with which to influence the U.S. government by appointments, by putting people he knows and trusts who are loyal to him in various positions of power. And I find that to be one of the most frightening things. And then Go ahead.
I was going to interject that that's exactly what they talked about on some of those old movies about JFK, was that they didn't want 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 consecutive terms of all Kennedys. And this is Executive Action, if you remember that movie.
Yes.
That was the one that first came out. That was the first Oliver Stone movie, basically, that really spelled out a lot of information. And then after that, they took off on different movies and stuff describing that feeling. But that's exactly what they did with the Bush family, you know. And if they can't get Jeb Bush in there, who else is going to get in there? And I heard
a comedian once say that you know a family is pretty frickin' dumb if the smartest one is named Jeb.
Jeb.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I look at what our 2016 choice is likely to be. It's likely to be Jeb Bush versus Hillary Clinton. And, you know, I'd rather stick a gun in my mouth and pull the trigger than vote for either one of those.
Well, I'll run for office, and you can put me in there, and I'll fix things. You know,
what would you fix? What would the first thing you'd do be?
Oh, I'd start at the top and fire everybody and then replace them with people I knew that were trustworthy, because that's always been the problem. You know, corruption does not exist at the bottom without the top being involved. You got to cut the head of the snake's head off to get to the rest of the body. They're never going to do that. It's like since 1974... Well, actually, it was in 75 or 76. I was actually in the executive office building doing my security rounds, and I came across this office, which I'm supposed to check and make sure there's no documents that say top secret laying around and the safe's not closed properly. And I believe that was the NDCP, National Drug Control Policy Director's Office, Peter Benziger at the time, I think. And you got a Border Patrol guy in the southwest border asking for help. They've got less than 10,000 agents all across the border, and they need like 50 right now, you know, and they're talking about all this other stuff. You know, look at what Obama's been doing, you know, Mr. Kenya. So a lot of this stuff's been covered up, and it's never changing. And they always tell you they're going to fix this. They don't. They lie.
Can I interject something here? Because it reminds me of a New Zealand film made by a documentary filmmaker here called Alistair Barry. And there's a reason I'm saying this, of course. It might not be relevant until I get to the punchline. But he interviewed a whole bunch of our former prime ministers, our former heads of cabinet and heads of state and things of that nature, asking them what their first night as their head of state or whatever was like. And you know what was really funny? Every single prime minister promised the people this, that, and the other. We're going to cut taxes. We're going to try to keep our state assets and our strategic assets in New Zealand control and out of the hands of foreigners, blah, 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 blah. X amount of really, really great campaign promises that I'm sure we've all heard in every single country. And you know what they said? every single time, this was like four prime ministers this guy interviewed, all their assistants, he said they all got a phone call that night from Treasury saying, congratulations, Mr. Prime Minister, I've got some bad news. There's been some really bad economic turmoil building up in the quote-unquote background that was caused by the quote-unquote other guys before you, and you basically have to renege on every single one of your promises, or we're going to collapse the economy. All right? And so when people were talking about corruption, and I think this is what we, I think John made a very good point there about firing a lot of the people at the top, is because Treasury was actually running our country and still is to this day. Because what doesn't change once you elect a new head of state? The bureaucracy. Well,
the bureaucracy never changes because exactly. These are all lifers. And that's one of the things I think we should do is take anybody who's a GS-15 or above and offer them early retirement.
Right. Oh, that's good. That's exactly a good point, because a lot of those people are still there because they're civil servants, but some of them are appointed, like in the United States Treasury Department, they go up to a certain GS-15, actually GS-13 or 14, then they become...
Sorry, I'm unfamiliar with GS-13, 15,
yeah,
these references.
Yeah, I was going to explain that.
A GS-15 is the equivalent of a colonel in the Army.
Okay.
And so you've got someone who's got some ability, some authority, and they're in a position of relative power over whatever their bailiwick is, whether they're in Department of Transportation, whether they're in housing and urban development, whether they're in defense, whatever. They're a civilian employee who's a bureaucrat who's there no matter who comes and goes through the elected process. They're always there. And they can influence how the laws are implemented, how the regulations are seen through, if you will. And it's a real problem because, like you just point out, they don't change. They're always there.
Yeah, they've got stuff higher than GS-15 or 14, which is senior executive service, which takes them out of the control of the civil service, and they're actually special people between that and the appointees. And the appointees are guaranteed a job plus all these other benefits like congressmen, senators, and the commissioner of customs, for instance, because that's one step away from the White House, you know, the cabinet members and things like that. So it's that chain of succession that gets involved later.
Now, I'd also like to make an interesting point here. I'm sure you guys have heard the news that Robin Williams just died. And you know what happens on film sites? You know how people illegally download movies and watch them and things of that nature? All these Robin Williams films started being watched again just after he died. And one of them was a film called Man of the Year. Have you guys seen this film?
I don't remember it.
Okay, you're gonna want to watch this film, okay? Robin Williams, on that same year he made that movie, did a stand-up comedy sketch called Weapons of Self-Destruction, where he criticizes the U.S. government, where he talks about how lobbyists are in control of the country, how poor people can't afford lobbyists of their own, and how the politicians, etc., should wear very similar uniform styles to NASCAR, how you have, you know, Mobil and,
who's sponsoring
and Goldman Sachs.
Them. Yeah.
You know.
That would be too good to be true.
Well, incidentally, this was what film Man of the Year was actually about, is Robin Williams is playing a comedian talk show host, very similar to the vein of, say, Jon Stewart political comedy. And they made the point in the film that he should actually run for president. And he does. And he wins. So a comedian becomes the leader of the free world. How does he win, though? He wins because the corrupt company that makes the electronic voting machines tried to conceal a glitch that accidentally split the vote and clipped him and made him the president. And then they try to assassinate the woman from within that company who actually exposed it, right? And she manages to find the president, tell him about this glitch, and he's faced with a very important choice. Do I, considering there's no other evidence or whatever that this ever happened, because there's no voting records from the machines, do I, A1, keep continuing to be president as the first comedian president and actually try and do some good with this country, or do I do the honest thing and step down? And he did step down, Right. And I thought that this was quite a profound film, in fact, because you're talking about how the US is truly run, and it's only through the comedians that you will hear that news, and it's only through the news that you'll actually just laugh at everybody.
Hey, I got to ask you a question.
Shoot.
How well do you know about the registration, voter registration in the United States as opposed to other countries like Mexico? I don't know about New Zealand, but are you familiar?
Slightly. If you're black, you get struck off the roll in a lot of southern states because you traditionally vote Democrat, and that's what they did in the 2000 election with Bush. If you have criminal convictions, you're not allowed to vote. And so it's like, oh, you've had a criminal conviction for a law that perhaps, I don't know, doesn't have any validity or whatever, so therefore you're no longer allowed to determine the leadership of your country. I think that's kind of unfair.
Well,
what, 20% of Americans even vote anyway? So you're talking about 80% apathy versus 20% stupidity, and the stupidity always wins.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. But what I was going to point out specifically was that a lot of people assume that they have certain freedoms, and to vote is ridiculous because it doesn't exist. You can go to Mexico and get a voter registration card with your photograph, thumbprint, a verified address, and that's better than a national ID card. That's what they use in Mexico right now, and they still have overturned elections because of people that they put in the computer. The United States, on the other hand, they get people registered out of, they come out of a supermarket somewhere, name your favorite largest supermarket, Walmart or whatever, and there's a guy out there sitting there, all he does all day is just take registrations and get people to sign signatures on ballots and stuff, and he doesn't even ask them or verify their citizenship because people are so damn stupid. The voter registrar takes all these affidavits. Oh, we got Mr. and Mrs. Juan Lopez from Tijuana, Mexico, and here's their U.S. address, and they just registered to vote. They're new Democrats this week. Not to mention all the dead people, you know.
Well, Vinny and John, the biggest problem, I think, in the U.S., the biggest problem is that we outsource our civic responsibility. We no longer do the things that matter. We got fat, dumb, and happy. We became very lazy as a people. That's why we're having the problems we're having right now.
I actually, you just kind of nailed it there, didn't you, John?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, because there's another word I'm trying to think of, but it's probably too far advanced for my time of day or something, but it's the same thing. It's a laziness that, as he pointed out, because over the years, you just kind of get used to it, but that's like the frog in the boiling water trick, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's sloth, you know, at the end of the day.
It really is. We don't deserve to be free unless we're willing to get up off the sofa and go do something about it.
I mean, to many Americans, freedom is simply being able to buy McDonald's down the end of the street without end. You know, freedom is being able to eat without a knife and fork or without cooking for 10 years in a row. You know what I'm saying? That's mm-hmm. that's not freedom, okay? Freedom is being able to, I don't know, make a difference in your own community just because you want to make that difference, because you actually want to put the effort in. Freedom is being able to invent stuff without the government coming and taking your patents and shutting your ass down. Freedom is about actually being free, not having all these trinkets of a modern society that actually have no value to the soul, the conscience, or the nation as a whole.
Yeah, that's just stuff. People collect stuff, but they don't know what real freedom is, especially when you've been locked up like I have. You know, something I don't go into too often, but people don't realize it. Just to bring up an example, I know a guy who's the first black agent to John F. Kennedy on his presidential detail, Abraham Bolden, and they set him up years ago to discredit him. That's what the government does when you expose the truth, like you guys are helping to do by us just talking on the airwaves here, and you can be a target as well. I mean, they can find something, they'll arrest you on a bogus charge, they'll use new illegal alien like they did on me, who was actually previously convicted for setting people up in line, and yet the jury still doesn't understand that. Those people are dumb, you know. And the judge certainly went along with it. So Who appointed that judge? Oh, yeah, it was Bill Clinton.
Oh, my God. It reminds me of, like, how dumb jurors are. I recall listening to the radio here in New Zealand, and this dude called up, and he said, you know, I was on a jury this one time, and one lady decided that the person was guilty because the guy was wearing a yellow tie, and people who wear yellow ties don't tell the truth, she said.
Psychotic.
And the guy got convicted and sent to jail for 6 years.
Oh, my God.
Well, Vinny, I thought of something while we've been talking here. That is, you know, you talked about how the Treasury would call the newly elected prime minister and tell him that the economic collapse is going to come if you implement any of your new programs. I think the way to get elected then is just promise that you're going to collapse the economy. And then you pull the teeth from the Treasury. So, well, great, you're here to help me. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, that might work if you did it. Actually, that would work on a private platform. For example, backroom deals and what have you. Hey, Treasury, I'm going to collapse the economy. Don't worry, boys. We've got the stuff well in hand. And then you go out to the public and you say, I'm going to create jobs. I'm going to fashion the economy. I'm going to create a green industry, blah, 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 blah. And you tell everybody, you know, you're going to loosen our dependence on foreign oil. You're going to cut taxes. You're going to do all this stuff. And you're going to get everything back on track. And meanwhile, in the backroom deal, you just say the exact opposite thing, and then boom, your super PAC comes in, all your political donations increase exponentially because everybody's stupid enough to think that you're telling the truth to the public. And then, hey, once you actually get into politics, once you actually get in there, it's kind of like Bill Hicks said, there's a dark, smoky room with a couple of guys smoking on cigars. New president comes in, one guy says, roll the film. And it's a shot of the Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before, almost suspiciously as though it's from the grassy knoll. And they roll the film, and then they turn to the president and they say, have you got any questions? And he goes, oh, well, only what my agenda is.
Yeah, I've seen that film many times, different angles.
Yeah. All right, speaking of different angles, we've come to the end of the segment right this moment. John Carman, ladies and gentlemen, I think you need to give out your email address, didn't you, John, because your website's not updated all that quickly these days.
Yes, could I please?
Go for your life, son.
First, it's a website, customscorruption.com, or you can Google John Carman, C-A-R-M-A-N. And if anybody's interested in sending me a nice email or maybe an attached PayPal donation, I appreciate that. John.A.Carman, C-A-R-M-A-N, @gmail.com. That was kind of a joke about the PayPal, but you never know.
Yeah, I never joke about money. Except when it's the government's money. Mike Harris as well, he's here with us. He has a show 5 days a week from 2 p.m. till 4 p.m. Eastern Time on freedomslips.com. Ladies and gentlemen, that's freedomslips.com.
Studio B, actually.
Studio B, yes.
Studio B. So if you want to come tune in, listen, we get some pretty spirited debates, and we're not afraid to call a spade a spade.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't use the N-word then, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, the N-word, I do use the N-word. I use the word Negroes, which is the proper scientific racial category. I won't use the other one because I think it's disrespectful. I don't want to disrespect anyone. Like, yeah. I'm a Caucasian, they're Negroes, and, you know, the Asians are really Mongoloids, or, you know, however you want to slice that. And so there's proper terminologies, and there's improper.
Yeah.
I'm kind of teasing you a little bit because I got black friends, and I got one lady black a friend of mine. She says, "Oh, you can't call me black. I'm something else this week," because that's back in the old days when they used to call them blacks, Negroes, and so on and so forth.
Would you guys like to continue this conversation about racism after the break?
Well, that's
yeah, sure. What the heck? Let's go ahead.
You want one more segment? No, you know, I'm having fun. No. Are you having fun? I hope the audience is too. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere.
My sight, hope for a generation.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Got me guests here, Mike Harris from Revolution Radio, and John Carman as well, formerly of Secret Service, formerly of like the all sorts of things. He's had more jobs than I did when I was a student. All right, like, you know, I'd do like one job here or there or whatever, you know, cut this lady's bush, cut that guy's tree down, or something of that nature. This guy has literally worked for Bush. He's kind of like been at the roots of the big corrupt tree that drops all the poisonous fruit all over the country. It's fantastic. And Mike, you've been living near the border yourself for some time. Now, I want to get into a really controversial thing here that will get people to hate me. You know, I love it when people hate me for some reason. It's really stupid. It's why I'm so pathologically honest. It's in the hope that who I really am will offend and distract people from the truth. Now, we're going to talk about racism. We're going to have three white guys talking about racism. This is going to be fun. Because every single time that I talk with a socialist or anything of this nature... I remember one time we were talking with, what was her name, Claudette Hoiti, who became a Member of Parliament for the New Zealand National Party, our equivalent to the Republicans, right? She recently got busted for, like, putting a grand on her parliamentary credit card for personal expenses when she's not supposed to do that. Uh-oh. And she met me one time at a meeting and offered me a job, right, making her videos and things of that nature. And we had this meeting and I tried to ask her, you know, before, if you're a truther, conspiracy theorist, blah, 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 and I mean that in a positive way, because if you're not a conspiracy theorist by now, you're freaking retarded. And the thing that she said was, oh, I believe in the New World Order, I believe in all of that. And I go, okay, well, what do you make of Barack Obama? She says, well, anybody who criticizes him is racist. I'm like, you don't know nothing about the New World Order. And have you noticed anybody who actually says you're racist, you're racist, you're racist, instead of looking at the evidence, is actually a hell of a lot more racist themselves than you are?
Well, Vinny, let me ask you a question. Nobody's been able to give me a definition. What is a racist and what does it mean?
A racist is a person who hates a particular race of people for no real good reason. They just hate them and want to hurt them and kill them and lynch them.
Well, then I'm not a racist because I don't want to hurt anybody. Yeah. You know, I just want to leave people alone to their own devices and let them go do what they do, and I go what I do, and, you know, just...
Yeah, just well, it's kind of like you call somebody a Nazi. What's a Nazi? Well, a Nazi is a person who passes draconian gun ban legislation and then uses the fact that their victims are disarmed to round them up and put them into camps for their own safety and then orderly exterminate them. That's a Nazi. And then
I've got a story for you about that. I was called when I was running for governor of Arizona. I had some very strict border control issues out there, and someone says, "You sound like a Nazi." And I looked at the guy. This is at a public forum, and I said, "I wouldn't make a pimple on a Nazi's ass."
See, and again, this is what happens over time, is that words lose their meaning because people actually don't care about the meaning anymore, and they're not looking at things on an intellectual standpoint, they're looking at it from an emotional, reactionary standpoint, which are really good at derailing any kind of reasonable debate. I've got a great Agreed. Little picture here that I post on Facebook every now and again, and it says, "Are you losing the debate? Shout racist! It'll automatically derail the debate, allowing you to snatch victory."
Well, that sounds good.
See, it works. And the best thing you can do, my friend John Eisen once told me, he edits a magazine he used to write for Rolling Stone, and he said, "If you're a Nazi, the best thing to accuse your opponents of is being Nazis." Takes the heat off you, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does, because it just drives the point in the opposite direction of where it was aimed.
So let's talk about what is real racism and what is fake racism. Okay, real racism is the CIA importing cocaine and heroin and specifically using agents to distribute them around black areas. That's racism, in my opinion. Would you agree?
Absolutely agree. And you look at how much of that the U.S. government has done. It's incredible how much this the CIA has done and is responsible for. And this whole drug cartel thing, the drug cartels wouldn't exist without the CIA. And now I look at this as this is another reason why to repeal the Drug Enforcement Act of 1970 and perhaps legalize a great many of these things and have an intelligent debate about it. Take the profit motive out.
Mm. And now, here's another example of racism. It is in the poor black community in inner city projects and things of that nature. If you are married, you cannot receive any form of government compensation to help you feed your kids or anything of that nature, which means your husband, more or less, has to work 2 to 3 jobs in order to survive. And the vast majority of black males in those areas cannot put themselves through that amount of work because most people can't. And in so doing, they defather the black community. And not having a father in your early or modern life, a lot of studies have confirmed, makes you exponentially more likely to get a criminal conviction. And who's running all the private prisons right now? Isn't it? You know, I think it's inconsequential because the mere fact of the matter is they now have a steady supply of black slave labor in the prisons, and they pay them about 20 cents an hour to do all these kind of things, and they're subcontracting all of the slave labor out to major US corporations. That to me is struck as racism, isn't it? Because what's the population of prisons? It's 90% black, isn't it?
Well, not enough, 90%, but it is majority black. You know, it just seems like it. And you know, the whole thing. You look at Lyndon Johnson with his Great Society, the War on Poverty, the Civil Rights Act, all these things. Something that the U.S. does not do, it's a failure of government, is they don't look back and say, did this policy succeed? Did it not succeed? Did the war on poverty do what it's supposed to do? Did the war on drugs achieve its stated goals? Did the NAFTA agreements really result in more knowledge-based jobs if we gave up our manufacturing-based jobs? These things, they haven't worked, but yet our government is so stubborn and stupid, they won't go back and evaluate. It failed. It's an unmitigated failure. Let's repeal it. Let's do something else.
Could I interject? What if the so-called failure was actually the objective?
Well, that's the point. And so I said the stated goals. Did it achieve its stated goals? And let's look at NAFTA, for instance. They said NAFTA.
John, I think you've got a little bit of noise going on in the background there, man. I'm going to mute
that
your
mic.
No? I heard a little bit of rustling
it was
around.
It was me scooting my chair back.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm guilty. Mea culpa. But no, really, you look at like NAFTA, for instance. It's stated that this is going to be a good thing. Americans are going to get more jobs from this. We may give up a few low-margin manufacturing jobs, but we're going to get all these new knowledge-based jobs. Well, they never appeared. So NAFTA has been, in my opinion, an unmitigated failure. All of these free trade agreements have.
Well, they should have called it SHAFTA.
Yeah, they should have.
Yeah. It's like that old country song, you know, when I got divorced from my wife, she got the gold mine and I got the SHAFTA.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
I'm sorry. Racism. This has totally just derailed everything.
But the thing is, I look at you know this whole Great Society Johnson put in place. The U.S. has spent $23 trillion since 1965. It's a lot of money. A lot of transfer of tax revenue from people who work to other people who didn't earn it. And you know, believe me, the government and all their cronies and friends are taking their cut off the top. But has it achieved anything? And I don't think it has. I think it's really set race relationships back in this country far worse than they were. Even before the Civil War, I think that they're at an all-time low in this country right now. And it's time for a national dialogue. Black people and white people got to start to talk and say, "Hey, we don't like how you do this. Well, we don't like how you do that." And let's open it up. Let's get this out there. Everybody's worried about this political correct agenda here. And say, look, you know, as a white taxpayer, I'm disappointed that you've got 5 generations of black families on welfare. It stinks. And the blacks can offer their things. Well, yeah, but there's racism against us. Well, yeah, show me. Where is it? Show me where the racism is with affirmative action. And it's time to really have a national debate in the USA and really around the world about what is racism. You know, how does it affect all of us all the time? Because I look at affirmative action, that's racism, brother. Whenever you're going to hire a less qualified person over a more qualified person, I want the best guy for the job. You know, if I give the example often of if I had to go in for cardiac surgery, you know, a bypass, and I've got 3 doctors to choose from. I have a white guy, a black guy, and an Asian. I'm picking the Asian. because he's probably the best and brightest. I don't want the black guy because he's probably an affirmative action hire. That's another form of racism. And all these things that are intended to create these positives create negatives. And let's just get rid of all this. Let's just promote
people. It's like resentment. I think there's something to be said if you put two children in a room, you give one of them a toy, and you don't give the other one a toy. The one who doesn't have the toy is going to be pissed off at the one who does, right? And that's the thing. If you're not treated equally under the law or anything like that, then you're screwed. Now, I think there's a good point about affirmative action here, and we have a local New Zealand example whereby we've one of the only countries in the world to actually have a treaty with our local population because we couldn't actually defeat them in battle because they were just, well, basically the New Zealand Māori invented trench warfare, which the British and the rest of the Western world stole and used in the early 1900s to great effect, or the Great War, rather. And what is happening now in New Zealand is a very interesting phenomenon based upon this racial issue of what they call treaty claims, treaty settlements. So the Māori tribes will go to the government and say, look, we've got all these lawyers and blah, 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 and they say this, that, and the other, and you need to give us money. And then the government goes, okay, we'll give you money. And then they take that money, and then they give it to themselves and their own little wealthy elite clique within that, and they don't allow people to actually benefit one iota from shares in the tribe unless, here's the kicker, you can benefit from Māori tribal assets and land compensations and things of that nature if you manage to prove your lineage and ties to the tribe. Now, how many uneducated, downtrodden Māori are capable of doing that? And the answer is virtually none of them, which means that only the educated already and family lineage proven already Māori can actually get any benefit from the taxpayers' money that compensates their tribe for something that was taken off them 100 years ago that they've already been paid five times for in the land courts, right? So here's the interesting thing. Just like there are elites in Europe, elites in America, there are elites within racial groups and segregations and things of that nature as well, who will often take up the mantle of being the champions for social justice and the champions of equality and what have you, just so they can manipulate people and keep it all for themselves.
And that is a fact.
Right.
It's sad.
It's no different. And so when people talk to me about racism, I say, look, mate, are you part of the human race? So am I. It's the only frickin' race there is. We're all brothers in this. Now, the other element that I wanted to put in here, I'm sorry to keep talking over you, but it's when you have a conflict where people aren't aware of each other's unique cultural gifts, and culture is something that I think is far more important than race. Are you a psychopath or are you a good person? Do you engage in scumbaggery or do you engage in do-goodery? All right? Those are the only things. If you want to measure somebody's character attributes, in my opinion, are they a psychopath or not? If they are a psychopath, they'll manipulate, they'll steal, they'll lie, they'll cheat, they'll do everything bad. If they're not, there's no need to discriminate against them.
No, I agree. I can't argue with that. But, you know, the thing in the U.S. that we look at here is we've got multiple generations now on that have been welfare recipients. And
sorry to interject, but I think it was it Martin Luther King or Malcolm X that said that welfare is going to destroy black America?
That was Malcolm X.
Yeah, see, there you go.
And they murdered Malcolm X. Because you look at this whole thing, it really has destroyed the black community and the black family in particular. And I tell you what, it hasn't helped the white families either, because you know there's more poor whites on welfare than there are blacks, because you know whites are a much larger portion of the population.
I'm included.
But it's a sad thing whenever it goes generation to generation. It was never meant to be an intergenerational dependency system. So you know, maybe we need to make some changes on how it is. I don't want to see anyone starve in the streets. We want to help everybody, but there are limits to the largesse of the American taxpayer. And perhaps maybe a 5-year, even a 10-year lifetime limit on welfare benefits. Does that sound reasonable, to 10 years to get your act together, to get yourself, you know, into a better situation?
I'm not sure if it's an arbitrary thing, like in terms of it should take you this much time or that much time. I think it's more like if you destroy a community's ability to be self-sustainable, then what's the likelihood that they're going to be constantly searching for a way to sustain themselves, right? And in America, it's very, very specific in terms of sabotage of the black community. I'm holding a book in my hand, The FBI War on Tupac Shakur and Black Leaders, U.S. Intelligence's Murderous Targeting of Tupac, MLK, Malcolm X, the Panthers, Hendrix, Marley, Rappers, and Linked Ethnic Leftists. And this is by an author named John Potash. So there actually is a very well-documented case of official racism. Tupac Shakur's father, for example, he was being hunted by the Chicago PD at one point, and he was staying over at a friend's place. And the Chicago PD rolled around outside his house, and they said to everybody, you know, get out, you know. And then they just started firing. Just right after they warned them, and then they started firing. And these boys were on the floor, you know. They didn't stand up or anything. They weren't that stupid. And then after they stopped firing, they emptied all their little revolvers from the cars outside. And then they said, come out if you're still alive. And Tupac's father, I think he, or was it his uncle, I forget which, but he took off his shirt, he took off his pants, he took off his underwear, and he came out butt naked, all right? He told his friend to do so as well, all right? And his friend didn't. His friend came out wearing just his pants, and they shot him. The reason why is because then they could claim he might have had a gun on him.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're talking about real institutionalized stuff, and this is where it actually starts to get into that real nougaty core, when you actually have documented evidence of proven actual COINTELPRO. The reason why COINTELPRO was even started, and the reason why many of us who are truthful servants of the community and the public trust like ourselves, the reason why that was all started was because of the black civil rights movement in America and all those tactics that they used to use to sabotage, kill, intimidate, etc., to get people off their campaign trail, to stop doing what was right for their people and what they felt was good for their best communities. The same tactics are now being employed on everybody else now.
So where do you see this going, Vinny? You live in New Zealand, and what do you see? What's your perception of the U.S.? How do you see the direction of our country going? And make some predictions for us. What do you see happening in the next 3 months, 6 months? What do you see?
Well, imagine for a moment that the U.S. is exactly the same as England, exactly the same as Canada, exactly the same as Australia and New Zealand. We're called the Five Eyes Nations because we've all signed this big treaty under Project Echelon as well to spy on each other. It's illegal. It was illegal once upon a time for all of us to spy on our own citizens. So what they do is they just made a big treaty so they spy on everybody else's citizens and share the information. I love it how that works. So, what's the direction of the U.S.? It's the same direction as everything else. Down. Very much down. And as things go down, people get really angry, people get really frustrated. And traditionally throughout history, this usually brings about some form of revolution. What's problematic about this is that you're talking about a group of elites that are basically the masters of creating and fomenting false revolutions, you know? They'll always wind up with some kind of like false central bank and what have you. I liken it to the freedom-loving people, those who will actually fight for freedom at the expense of their lives, sacred honor, fortunes, etc., like the founding fathers did. They're in a war against those who aren't willing to lay down and make sacrifices for the good of their nation. They're against those people who are currently dominated by self-interest and are incapable of thought unless an authority figure tells them to think in a certain way. So what I see happening is this. Those people like us will soon become official targets of the establishment. We're already semi-targets under terrorism legislation. They say that people who are wearing blue jeans or make frequent references to the Constitution are people that you should be watching out for in terms of terrorism. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that this is the frog in the boiling pot, that eventually the state surveillance, the scumbaggery, and the subversion of the democratic process, the judicial process, justice in general, will only get worse. And we will become targeted very, very specifically in order to eliminate our voices, our mind, and our mantra from the airwaves and from the general public consciousness. Only with the elimination of the thought and the actions of freedom-loving people can people be totally and utterly prepared to accept a dark age of tyranny that will last the next 1,000 years.
Well, Vinny, if I get renditioned, come get me out, okay?
Don't worry, bro. They'll do it simultaneously. Okay. In fact, that happened in 2008 in New Zealand. Actually, we had these things called the terror raids. You know, I'm sure you've heard these things in the media in the States. You know, where they raid a big compound. They got all these guys in black uniforms, and there's like a couple of old people there or something painting in their garages.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. Or they had the wrong house.
Yeah. Well, this was the biggest thing in New Zealand history in terms of terrorism raids, and guess what? 18 other countries had similar sized and similar publicly promoted media spun terrorism raids on the exact same day. All of our intelligence agencies are now coordinated at a central level, is what that says to me. And that bodes very, very bad implications for any kind of resistance, because as we well know, the entire reason why the intelligence apparatus really exists is to combat terrorism. They've now defined terrorism as somebody who actually wants freedom. That's counterintelligence.
Well, it is, and that's sad. That's really a sad state of affairs. And you know what's even worse about it? And you know, John might want to chime in on this, because this happened on our watch. We let this happen during our lifetime. And what kind of world are we going to leave to our kids if we don't pull the chestnuts out of the fire right now?
John?
Well, I'm waiting. I'm listening. I've already jumped in there with both feet because of my law enforcement background, and I suffered because of it, and I've been sent to prison. I've been on food stamps, but you can't take a program and say, okay, you can only use it for 10 years. It's abused by certain groups of people. It doesn't matter, because it's the situation they put you in, and I'm in one of those hard up against the wall situations between a rock and a hard place. And the only thing I've got coming in is SSI, which is basically Social Security Medical. So if I don't have a backup or an attorney in my pocket, how can you fight the system that's
John, let me ask the question of, you know, was this our current welfare, this welfare society, the safety net that we've got, was this intended to go over 3 and 4 and 5 generations and have people who've never worked and never will work? I don't think that's what the intention was.
No, I agree. I mean, I went to school.
So what do we do? How do we fix this?
Well, you force people to go to school, like all these people who are not going to school. There are problems with people like a guy named Alan Burson, who was a Rhodes Scholar, friend of Clinton's. He jumps in after he left his U.S. attorney job, just as an example, and became a superintendent of city schools in the city of San Diego. And the first thing he did was go in there and change all kinds of rules and regulations. And one small part of that was a zero tolerance on fights, people fighting at school. So if you and Vince decided to go fisticuffs for whatever reason, let's say he hit you first, doesn't matter, you're both kicked out of school. That's counter to the whole idea of getting an education. That is the wrong answer. And what they're doing is they're creating a whole civilization where people are getting into trouble because they don't have the proper teachers or the security people to let people go in and get an education and not have all these other extra stressors going on, because they don't have a controlled atmosphere. So they don't go to school. They go out and commit crime. They're forced to get an education when they go to prison, a GED, and then they're supposed to get a job when they get out, because that'll keep them busy, and that'll keep them in a situation where they can go ahead and contribute to a salary to support a family. But as you guys were stating earlier, the percentages of the blacks, not to pick on blacks this week, are not good, 60% or better.
Well, let's talk about education for a little bit, John, because...
We're coming to the end of the break here, actually. I think we really do need one more segment, and that wraps up a perfect two-hour show. You guys all right with that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll make it work.
All right, we'll be back in just a few seconds, ladies and gentlemen. Bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you want these kind of broadcasts to keep continuing, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. And go ahead, make a donation. We'll start up a regular automatic payment today through the PayPal, or if you're a New Zealand listener, the Kiwi Bank. We'll be right back with John Carman and Mike Harris talking about the problem with education. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final segment. We have former Secret Service John Carman and former runner for Arizona. Was it Arizona State Governor, Mike?
Arizona Governor, yes. Yeah. I actually had the temerity to stick my hat in the ring.
All right. Now, you were saying something about education. What was it?
Well, the issue with education is that we've developed this false paradigm in the country where we try to force everyone into this college liberal arts track. And you know what? That's not the way for a lot of people to go. We still need bakers. We still need butchers. We still need hairdressers. We need auto mechanics. We need welders. We need all of these things. And nobody offers that type of education out there right now. Unless you're in high school preparing to go to college on some liberal arts curriculum, that's all they want to train you for. And it's time to revamp our educational system to where we look at how are people going to be able to – not everybody wants to go to college. Everybody's got the aptitude for it. But maybe they can bake bread. Maybe they can weld. Maybe they can work on car engines or cut hair or do something. And maybe that's going to interest them more. And so maybe we ought to change our approach and allow for a more vocational track like we used to have 30, 40 years ago. To where that people can get the education that's going to allow them to support themselves and raise a family. And that's really what I want to see people do. I want to see people be able to be self-sufficient and become experts at what they do. Not everybody needs to go study philosophy at the University of such and such. Just a thought.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thought there.
Well, it is, and it's something that it's been glossed over. That once the teachers' union took over the educational system in this country, in the USA, I don't know how it is in New Zealand, but once the teachers' union took that over, all debate was over. Everybody had to go to college. Everybody has to. You're not going to get ahead in this world. Well, what do you mean not get ahead? Why can't I be the best barber I want to be? Why can't I be the best carpenter? These are good, honorable professions that pay decent money. And people can work and they can, like I said, pay for a house, car, raise a family. That's what it's about. It's get people off the welfare rolls. I mean, get people working. It's common sense. It's all local stuff. And, these things, get control of the school systems back in the local communities, get it away from the federal government.
Mm. Well, I think one of the problematic elements of education is that the government controls it. So is the government going to have a curriculum that forces you to question authority, think for yourself, do your own research, and have critical thinking faculties? Considering the government would not benefit in any way, shape, or form with an entire population with those mindsets.
Well, there's two chances and Slim's out of town.
Yeah. All right. Snowball's chance in hell that's going to happen naturally, which is why the very first piece of legislation passed in Nazi Germany to discriminate against a particular group of people was not against Jews or gun owners, it was against homeschoolers. Because once the government has forcible indoctrination of your children, they're no longer your frickin' children, are they? They belong to the state, and they believe that the state is great, which is why all back in the day of Nazi Germany, so many children signed up for the Hitler Youth. And people don't even realize what the origin, you know, the X-Men Wolverine origin of public schooling actually was. Have you ever heard of the Prussian Empire? Well, of course you haven't, because they don't freaking exist anymore. They used to, back in the day. This is pre-World War I. They introduced the first public schooling education, and then they had a war with France afterwards, and they beat the pants off France. You know, and back in the day, that used to be actually quite difficult to do, to beat the French, but now it's, you know. And you know what the French did after that? They said, bro, these guys, they can just have all these recruits coming at them, willing to just show up on a battlefield and die with blood pissing out of their necks, with a big smile on their face, because they're serving their country. Because all of these kids been indoctrinated from a very early age to think that their citizenship, their loyalty to the country is actually part of their spirit, it's actually part of their soul, part of their identity, is what we call national identity. And after this great example, everybody else started up their public education system. I've even seen real footage of US cavalry literally roping children with a lasso and dragging them to public school when they first started opening up in America. I'm not making it up. This is the whole reason for their existence. Now, how can we change this? What did schooling used to be like in America beforehand? Well, it turned out that literacy was very, very high pre-public schooling, because everybody read the Bible to their children and taught them to read themselves, and nobody ever wanted for education and what have you to a large extent, because all small towns and things of that nature had their own little schoolhouse, and they had all the children from youngest to eldest being educated in the exact same room, in the exact same way. So that means the youngest could learn off the elders could teach the youngest, and so on and so forth. So it works kind of like a family, sort of like a community, much in the same way that brothers and sisters sort of work together to help each other out. You know, like if you have a girl first or whatever, that little girl grows up to be 5-6 years old and is actually now capable of helping you out raising the next child to come along. And an education system that's very similar to how kind of worked back in the day. But everybody thought that this was a really bad idea, you know, for some reason. And now we have the dumbest group of people that have ever existed on the face of the frickin' earth. And what do they ask for? More education. And who do they ask to get that education from? The government,
of course.
Who dumbed them down in the first frickin' place. You know, it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy / feedback loop, isn't it? You get real dumb because you get educated in the government. Because you're real dumb because you got educated by the government, you ask the government to educate you more and dumb you down even more.
No, I mean,
did I miss something? You know,
I've seen some of those examples firsthand. But a lot of those people that get the jobs didn't get it based on their credentials; they got it based on nepotism. And I've seen some people that even in Bureau of Prisons, they would question people because they have to have a GED. You know what a GED is, right, folks?
Oh,
General Education Diploma or whatever. Well, most people that were in crime or have a criminal background, when they got into prison, they're forced to go take classes so that they can get their GED requirements, so they can get a GED. So that means that they're making a step towards educating somebody so they can go out, get a job, contribute to society, pay taxes, and all this other BS. But, you know, it's kind of funny because it reminds me of a guy who was being checked into prison, MCC, one day. And they were asking this gentleman who was cuffed to a chair, well, it says here on your application and information that you don't have a GED. And the answer was, no, I don't have a GED. Well, why not? Well, I went to college. See, that's how stupid they are. And in order to go to college, guess what you have to have? You have to have a high school diploma. So the answer was either a high school diploma or college. It's the same answer. And these people work for the government, and that's the kind of people that work in serious positions where they handle people. Those people are dangerous. The government is inept, corrupt, and they shouldn't be handling situations like that at all.
Well, I've spoken to a number of men about the definitions of words and how we often lose those definitions and meaning. Govern means control, and mente means mind, right? In the original Latin. So when somebody's talking about a government school, mind control school. Government hospital, mm-hmm. mind control hospital. Government agency, mind control agency. Mm-hmm. And then you wonder why all these people seem like they're under mind control. It's because they freaking are.
Well, if you control the head, you control the body.
In fact, this is part of the elite social engineering agenda to kind of... I don't know if you feel it, I mean, like I do, in a real physical sensation. It's sort of like not having enough oxygen in the air. I feel my countrymen slipping away, as if the thing that defined them once as creative, hard-working, loving, caring, generous individuals has now dissipated, faded away in favor of groupthink or tearing apart somebody in the media like a pack animal instead of asking what their story truly is. Do you feel the same sensation in the air, a kind of trepidation about the future, not just of your nation, but of your people?
Absolutely. You know, really do. I feel that Western civilization is at great risk right now. And I say that, you know, I wasn't raised in Europe. I was raised in the United States. And so we're a mixture here I am at least of Northern of European peoples, and I feel like all of Western civilization is currently at risk right now. And it's a very, very sad day. It's something worth fighting for.
It seems that the ability or the will to fight is sort of like something that gets stamped out. Because I recall, remember how you were just talking earlier about how if two people have a fight, both of them get stood down or suspended from school or whatever. Now, that happened to me a number of times. Like, I would literally get the crap kicked out of me, and then I'd get suspended for it. I was just like, yeah. No, I didn't even start
Wait
it. What the
a
hell
minute. What's wrong with this picture? Yeah.
And it took me about 15 years later to figure out it's to destroy your fighting spirit. To think, and it's ironic because I used to be a really violent kid. Like, dad left when I was young, and even when he was around, he was hitting me all the time and what have you. So what happens to young kids in that situation is they put the violence in their own life and their own pain, their own fear, and then they put it onto others, and they start hurting others as a way of compensating for the pain that they feel inside. And I think the last time that I actually physically hurt somebody was my best friend. I ripped a huge chunk of hair right off of his head, and then I took that huge clump of hair in my hand out to the principal's office, and I put it down on his desk, and I said, "I just ripped this off my friend's head. I need you to suspend me." It was on that day that I realized that every single time that I was involved in violence of any kind whatsoever, or resistance starting it, doesn't matter, I get suspended. So I cut out the middleman, I cut out the waiting for them to come and approach me, and I never laid a hand on anybody again. What's problematic about this is I've been assaulted quite a number of times since then, and my body locks up. I can't fight back. It's not only destroyed my ability to attack others in viciousness or anything, which was the original intention of stopping being a violent kid, but it's also destroyed my ability to even defend myself. And I think that this is actually the phenomenon that we're truly talking about here when we hear about our nations suffering corruption or politicians, etc., playing people off against each other. We've lost our ability to defend ourselves.
Well, they're poisoning the water with fluoridation, so you might want to check your T levels, too.
Well, I'll tell you what. I talked to my dentist about that because this dope wanted to give me a fluoride treatment on my teeth. I said, there's no way. You're not putting fluoride in my mouth. And this guy gave me a lecture. These dentists are so indoctrinated to believing, oh, there's no proof of this. I said, well, don't you read? I mean, yeah. You'll go get your decon rat poison. See what number one ingredient is. Oh, fluoride. Gee, I want to put that in my mouth. That's great.
Hey, look at this! Look at this sack of fluoride here. What's that? It's a skull and crossbones. What's that? What's that number there? It's a level 6. What does the 6 mean? It means biotoxin. 1 meaning you can drink it, you can bathe in it. It's water, and 6 being the highest level, meaning you have to have a breathing apparatus when it's around. Otherwise, if you're lucky, you'll die in about 10 seconds.
Well, you guys have heard of saltpeter, right?
Yes.
Yeah. My education always takes me to the Wikipedia or an encyclopedia anyway, no matter what, or I start talking to experts. And apparently the information I've got is that they've actually put this into the system throughout some of the government prisons and so forth, where they put it in certain people's food because it acts on the testosterone levels and keeps people from wanting to fight or resist.
Well, there's a couple of elements I wanted to expand to on that. This is information I can't confirm the source or whatever, but I was told by a dentist who was treating a man who worked for NATO, and he asked him what he did for NATO, and he says, well, it's my job to ensure all the NATO bases in Europe have their own self-fluoridating systems, because it's illegal to fluoridate public water in the European Union.
Wow.
All right? And he's only fluoridating the military bases. And I thought, whoa, that's very interesting, because I recall when Joseph Stalin was rounding up Ukrainians and things of that nature, and anybody who was resisting the vicious communist takeover of the motherland would be sent to a gulag, where they had fluoride in the water. And the reason why they have fluoride in the water is because they learned a little something off the Nazis. You only need 1/4 the amount of guards if you've got fluoridated water, because everybody becomes a hell of a lot more docile. Now, does that strike you as sort of like an interesting thing, considering we sort of live in prison-like cities nowadays and under surveillance? And then we've just kind of had our, I call it psychological castration.
No, I think you're right, but your comment about Ukraine really stirs me up a bit, because I look at what's going on in Ukraine today and I realize these are the same Bolsheviks. These are the sons and grandsons of the Bolsheviks who first starved the Ukrainians during the Holodomor back during when Stalin sent the down there to do that.
Yeah, 10 or 12 million people, according.
Yeah, 15 million people were starved to death. Starved to death. I mean, what a cruel way to go. And that's what they're doing to the Ukrainians today. It's the more things change, the more they stay the same. And we've got this problem in the world. This whole Bolshevik mindset that comes from a certain religious group is just not good.
Mm.
And what do we do to protect ourselves from it? Because they're coming here to the USA as well.
I agree, and the thing I find very difficult dealing with people my own age is that they don't have the benefit of gentlemen like yourself, is the years of wisdom and experience. Now, I think the cycle kind of goes in maybe a 30, 40, 50-year pattern, perhaps, before you see the exact same thing come rolling around again. And I was speaking to my friend Mikhail. He's 55, and he only woke up kind of like to the New World Order conspiracy about maybe 4 years ago or so. And I said to him, bro, that's how it works. The system's so good at brainwashing you, so good at keeping you complacent, that you have to see 50 years of scumbaggery before you realize anything's going on your own accord.
No, it takes time to figure it out. I mean, none of us are born knowing what to do. We're born into a system, and the system's got these rules. It takes you the first 25, 30 years to figure out what the rules are. And then you begin to see where the deviations from what the rules are supposed to be and how they're implemented really is. It's really a sad state of affairs. You know, what's the old German saying? Too soon old, too late smart.
John, you've been quiet there for a moment there. I'm sorry. You might be it might be a bit late in the day. We've only got about 5 minutes left.
No, I was taking all this. I know. I was looking at the time there. So I'm taking all this in. I mean, I could go on there for hours about some of the stuff. You guys have touched on subjects I didn't comment on, but I know a lot of the subjects and have dealt with them personally. I mean, you mentioned Highway Ricky Ross. I know about that case.
Freeway Ricky Ross.
Freeway, not the rapper, right?
It was ironic that he's called Freeway because the drugs weren't free, and then not called Highway because he was getting people high. I don't get. Anyway, sorry, continue.
No. Actually, that's how he did his deals. He did them on the highways because they couldn't be followed and be out in the open a certain way, as opposed to going to another location, which might be reclusive or not. And then I think Asada Shakur, Tupac's mom or aunt, I was asked to work that case when she escaped to Cuba. And that was worth at least $1 million from the FBI.
Her name's Afeni Shakur.
I'm sorry, I get them mixed up, but I looked it up and it says Asata. That's one of her aliases anyway.
Oh, sorry. There's actually two of them. There's Asata Shakur here, and her real name was Joanne Chesimard, or that might have been.
Joanne Chesimard, that's the one we're talking about, yeah. Yeah, she's the one that supposedly killed a New Jersey state trooper and then escaped. And she's been there for, God knows, over 40, 50, I don't know, 40 years, maybe. She's like 67 right now. But somebody from the FBI told me that it was okay if I grabbed this woman, took her out of that country, and dropped her off in Mexico or anywhere in the United States, and they would pay me $1 million and all this other stuff. And yet, what did they do? They came back and charged me with a conspiracy to kidnap in a foreign country on another case. You know, don't do what Doc Chapman did. I mean, he screwed up. That was another case, but that was the Max Factor error.
This kind of reminds me of a film I watched the other night called Snitch with, I think it's got The Rock in it or whatever. And there's a reason I'm doing this. The punchline's coming again, just like the last example of the New Zealand Treasury. But he's going in, and his child's been arrested, and he wants to, like, turn snitch for the DEA so that he can reduce his child's sentence. You know, what father wouldn't? And what he finds out is that it's actually really, really difficult to get the DEA to bust anybody, because if you get into a circle, and that circle's connected to a drug dealer higher than them, you actually need to keep informing and infiltrating and going higher and higher up the chain before they'll even bother to make an arrest. And it occurs to me that this is actually how the justice system in general kind of works. You need to get into it, and then the drug dealer tells you, okay, well, I've only just met you, so you're going to drive the first shipment. You're going to drive it. And then you get to location B, and they go, okay, we're going to change the rules on you again. And now you have to do this in order to prove your loyalty. And then he comes back and he does that mission, and then they say, okay, you've done that. And now we're going to give you $250,000 cash if you do this to prove your loyalty. And it's kind of like you have to prove loyalty, at the same time that the people you're trying to prove your loyalty to will soon as just kill you, right? Because they don't care about you. And that's exactly how the government works now, isn't it? They ask you to keep consistently proving your loyalty until such a day as they don't want you or need you or care about you enough anymore. They're not as valuable an asset as you were once in the day, and they can just drop you like a hot potato. It's the same thing that happened to you, isn't it, John?
Well, I worked undercover narcotics, which is a different aspect. But what you just said is another aspect of how they treat people that they've got bought off at the border, for instance. And they'll pay them off a certain amount of money. But what's really stupid about these employees is that they even sold out their integrity and became treasonous to the United States to do that. And yet they still don't realize that they're exactly what you just described, was that if you're even in the system, you can only go so high. And if the head guy says, I'm tired of that guy, I didn't like the way he looked at me, cut his head off, and that's what they're doing these days. They're cutting people's heads off, you know, in Mexico.
It's not only that, but look at how they treat our enlisted military servicemen. You know, they treat them as if they're absolutely expendable. And they don't care what they expose them to, whether it's Agent Orange or depleted uranium. They have no concept at all of what the life after service is going to be for these people, and it's really a tragedy.
I know people like that, yeah.
That's funny. That reminds me of a line from the new Godzilla movie. The boy's just getting off the plane, and he says, "Have you got family here?" And he goes, "Yeah." And he goes, and he says to him,
"I heard that one."
He says, "Take it slow. It's the one thing they don't train you for, going back to your family after you've been away for a couple of years."
Yeah. but the point is that, you know, how do we change these things? How do we begin to implement meaningful change in our broken and corrupt system. That's what I want people to think about. I think about this every day. What direct actions can we as individuals take to bring the system down and to put something else in place that's going to be beneficial for all of mankind? That's really where I'm at. That's what I spend my days thinking about these days.
I have a cunning catchment tarpaulin statement for that. Anything you frickin' well can, right? Think about this. How many ways are we being enslaved, manipulated, lied to, and what have you? In pretty much every single way you could conceive, right? So the question is, how many ways is it possible to resist that corruption and scumbaggery? And the answer is, any way you want. As long as you're not being corrupt, as long as you're doing the opposite of what the system would really want you to ideally do, as long as you don't keep your head down and do nothing, you're doing all right.
We're doing that right now. We're helping people to educate them, and that's a small part of what our whole schedule could be. But if we had extra time, I'm sure we'd say, hey, look, we need to get these people replaced. Look at the Congress in the United States. The Senate's not doing their job. They should be impeaching a half dozen to a dozen people right now and putting them in prison, but they're not going to. They're just going to wait and ride it out and keep more damages and more damages are going to keep piling up. You know, what's it going to take? You know, and then I was doing research on Malcolm X, and I keep remembering that saying, by any force necessary. And people don't get that.
Yeah. All right. John Carman, Mike Harris, wonderful to speak with you guys again. Of course, you can check out Mike Harris on Studio B, is it? On freedomslips.com, 5 nights a week. And, of course, John Carman. You can email him, john.a.carman@gmail.com, if you want to correspond or do any research or anything like that. Thank you very much, gentlemen, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. And please, if you want to continue this broadcast, you know, going on into the night, regardless of whether or not people listen to us or want to hear the freaking truth that they should. It's frustrating with the stupid people out there who keep voting for their own enslaved. Oh, God. Oh, my God. Yeah. Please go to thevinnyexpertshow.com and donate today. Don't bust a head gasket with an aneurysm.
I love this guy. He's great.
Vinny, thank you so much for having us on. We appreciate it. Have a good day.
Yeah, I love me too. Thank you very much. We'll see you again.